W252 DR Oshkosh and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. With thousands of evacuations and power outages still in California, yet another big storm's coming tomorrow night, says ABC's Alex Stone in Los Angeles.
With the National Guard deployed and FEMA on the ground, Governor Gavin Newsom says the storms have had an incredible impact, with more storms moving in this weekend.
Remember, California's size at 21 state populations combined.
He's now calling on Californians to remain vigilant this weekend when more flooding and mudslides are a real possibility.
People are cleaning up after weather officials reported over 40 tornadoes across seven states, Georgia and Alabama getting the worst of it, with several deaths. One of the volunteers in Alabama's Autauga County.
We're going to take care of our people. We'll take care of ours, and any help is welcome.
Special Counsel Robert Hur beginning his review of classified documents found in President Biden's Delaware home and at his personal office in Washington. He's appointed by the Attorney General. Wall Street's major indexes closed higher for the day. This is ABC News. Calling for a temporary stop in ocean floor prep work for offshore wind farms in New Jersey and New York. Lawmakers at local, state, and federal levels after another dead whale washed ashore. An environmental group and some citizens groups opposed to offshore wind are asking the Biden administration to investigate. More tributes on social media to Lisa Marie Presley, who died yesterday at 54. Docs say her heart stopped at home. She was rushed to a hospital. ABC's Matt Rivers.
Lisa Marie was just 9 years old when Elvis died at the age of 42, later becoming sole heir of his estate. As she embarked on her own music career, but like her father, she battled addiction for decades. Lisa Marie entering rehab several times, most recently in 2016 for prescription painkillers.
I had bottom, like below bottom, from where I was to just from, it's pretty miraculous.
Lisa Marie was married four times, most famously to pop megastar Michael Jackson.
Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Your hometown radio, refreshed. Keeping you informed, entertained, and connected on the Civic Media Network, civicmedia.us. The Civic Media Network of radio stations across Wisconsin. We are your hometown radio, refreshed.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. Therapists, social workers, and counselors in Wisconsin can resume trying to change clients' gender identities and sexual orientations. The Evers administration banned conversion therapy in 2020, but Republicans who control the Joint Committee for Review of Administrative Rules lifted the ban yesterday. LGBTQ rights advocates say conversion therapy has been debunked and is even harmful. A Republican member of the Wisconsin Elections Commission says he stands by what he said in an email praising lower voter turnout among Black and Hispanic voters in Milwaukee in November. Other members of the bipartisan panel say they want Robert Spindell to resign, but Spindell says he's staying put. In sports, the Bucks fell to Miami last night 108-102. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, WISS 1100 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media Network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Hey, this is Jim Santel. I am the host of Morning Cannolis. Every single Saturday morning from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., we talk about the major stories in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in America. Delighted to have you join, call in, and be a part of our discussion right here on the networks of Civic Media.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. on WISS 1100 AM, 98.3 FM, Oshkosh Air Support.
Go by any construction site in Wisconsin, you're going to see a lot of Michael's trucks. Since 2014, they've had more than $1 billion worth of contracts with the state government.
A large part of those coming with Foxconn without any results in that area.
Do we want a governor who might be giving his brothers the contract? I think he needs to answer that before the election.
We'll just kick that one down the road. We'll cross that bridge when we get to it. But of course, Michael's corporation would get to build that said bridge.
Listen, Monday through Friday from 2 to 3, it's Dueling Tangents.
Courage. I learned it from my adoptive mom.
Hold my hand.
You hold my hand.
Learn about adopting a teen from foster care at AdoptUSKids.org. You can't imagine the reward. Brought to you by AdoptUSKids, the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, and the Ad Council.
You're listening to a Civic Media radio station. To learn more, go to our website, civicmedia.us. Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, Mateus Fernando on Twitter tweeted at me, low pay and poor working conditions are against my religious beliefs. And this is an interesting moment. If the Supreme Court does what I think they're going to do, which is going to make the ability to take off of work, for religious reasons, you know, because I'm telling you, we're going to be the most religious country on the planet. If we can then tie this, because I'm telling you, once the Supreme Court decides this, I'm starting the Church of Collective Bargaining, and we are going to fight for better wages, hours, and conditions as a religious right. Because, you know, coming out of the pandemic, the sad reality is all those people we called heroes, you know, frontline heroes, essential. You know, who were those people? Well, they were poor, low-wage workers, mostly women, who bared the brunt of the struggle. And here to talk about, well, that and where we go from here, I've asked Amanda Friedman to come talk with us. She's the author of Getting Me Cheap, How Low-Wage Work Traps Women and Girls in Poverty. She's got a new book out. I want people to take a look at it. TheNewPress.com is where you can get it. We'll get links out on social media. Amanda, thanks for taking time for us.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
So I think the pandemic did highlight a lot of who our essential workers are, and I think America was surprised.
Yeah, so actually our book was almost finished when the pandemic happened. So certainly this is a topic or something that's been going on for a long time, right? But suddenly the pandemic revealed it and it was in the news in a way that it hadn't been before. So the New Press actually asked, you know, we were about to hand in the manuscript and then we needed to add a bunch of interviews related to the pandemic.
No, you're right. It's not new. Look, this, you know, I'm the child of a single mother. I grew up in a housing project. My mother, you know, was the first one fired, last one hired. Things were incredibly difficult in low wage work, especially back then when you didn't have a lot of the social safety net programs. So I understand it, I think, a lot better than a lot of people do and want to make it better. But I think the pandemic did make it more aware for society broadly that who our essential workers really are and how badly they're treated.
Right. And they're so much less likely to have, you know, any kind of benefits, right? So we see professional salaried employees around 30%, still not great, right? But having packages like in terms of flex time, parental leave, it's around 2 to 4% of hourly workers. Almost no one we talked with had those kind of benefits. And yet, since so many of them are single mothers juggling childcare, work, family, without enough resources to pay to bridge the gap, right? Which is probably what I would do. I would hire a sitter for more hours, right? They're much less likely to have the benefits that they need at work and the flexibility that they need at work, you know, to be able to meet that gap. We also just see, so many of the moms we talked with piecing together more than one job. I mean, almost none of them had health insurance. So, you know, they'd be kind of kept under the whatever they needed to, the amount of hours that they needed to work in order to get health insurance at one job, you know, so they'd have another job, maybe at night when they, when the kids were sleeping, if they had a roommate, the roommate could care for their children. But just, you know, I'm hearing a lot, and you're probably hearing a lot, people saying there's so many jobs right now, right? We can't find people to.
Nobody wants to work anymore.
But they're crappy jobs. They're not paying what these families need, especially single parent families. They're not paying a living wage. You know, it's been 13 years federally. We haven't changed the minimum wage. So it's the wages, it's childcare, you know, and then it's also those benefit packages in the workplace. So when you're talking about, you know, what policies to support, we certainly say, you know, a couple of things. To me, it's striking. I've seen numbers around 70 or 80% of Americans, you know, Democrats and Republicans support universal child care. So meaning some kind of child care that's paid for from 0 to 5. So we actually just saw in the midterms, I feel like this didn't get reported a ton, but New Mexico actually passed a ballot initiative to make it a constitutional right for all citizens of New Mexico to childcare from birth to 8, from 0 to 5. That's huge. I mean, the way that they're doing it and is using, I think it's a land grant fund they're tapping into, and they're also just extending public school, right? So they're tapping into some public school funds. So I think that makes a huge difference. I mean, childcare was one of the biggest hurdles or obstacles faced by the moms that we talked to. Same really big support for paid parental leave. I mean, that was an initiative that was under Biden's original social infrastructure plan, right? It's really supported by Democrats and Republicans, and we can't seem to get it passed.
It's amazing when you do the polling and you talk to actual people, you know, how progressive people's politics really are, the policies that they want to pursue, the things that they want, and how unprogressive our political system is, because the things that we, the working people, really want, we're never going to get because, well, we still have the place where all good ideas go to die, the U.S. Senate. When I look at this and as you're talking to these people, is there hope that there's a chance for change? Is there desperation that things are never going to change? What kind of sense did you walk away with? Because, you know, I go back to myself, you know, when, you know, growing up, you know, in the environment that we did, my mother still pushed this ideal that if you work hard, you played by the rules, you'd get ahead. Sadly, the learned experience over the last couple of decades has not been that. I'm curious what sense you got from people.
Right. So what was striking to me, and I mean, I actually started some of this work as a graduate student, was just that everyone was just working really hard, juggling a ton of things. And, you know, they weren't even, I was recognizing as a, you know, a younger person, their struggle is kind of like work family conflict. And they didn't even know what I was talking about. You know, I mean, they didn't recognize it in that kind of way, right?
The jargon.
They're not using those terms, and they don't have time to be trying to like push various policy initiatives, right? They're single parenting, you know, managing these crappy jobs, right? Which actually can be quite demanding. The kids have to go to appointments, the kids have to go to school. So they're really just struggling to be, I mean, I found like the best parents they could be. That was the most important thing to them. There were so many moms who were talking about like, listen, if they're going to fire me because my kid is sick and I have to leave, then that's, you know, that's what's going to happen. And I just move to another job, right? Because they did have an awareness that they're are plenty of crappy jobs to go around.
Well, there's always a number of crappy jobs out there. There's no question about that. You listen to The Rick Smith Show here with Amanda Freeman. She's the co-author of Getting Me Cheap, How Low-Wage Work Traps Women and Girls in Poverty. You can get it over at New Press. We'll get links out over how you can get there, thenewpress.com. Highly suggest this. Now, you know, I go back to, you know, we've done some policy things supposedly to help, you know, women and help families. I go back to the Clinton era with the welfare reform that they rammed through that mandated that women got to go out and work, got to go get a job. with no way to get the child care, no way to for transportation, no way to ensure that they get health care or any of those things that families need. And I keep coming back to the policy shortfalls that we continually don't get to get through. Do you have any hope that we're going to address this, or is this one of these things where we're going to have, we're going to write a book out of it, we're going to have a conversation, people are going to be upset, but ultimately it is what it is and it's never going to change?
I do. I mean, I'm more hopeful than that. I do think that when people, you know, the pandemic really unveiled a lot of these issues, and when people see the situation that's going on, I think that, I mean, that has to be the first step, right? We have, there's an example in the book from University of Massachusetts, where, you know, they had really vastly different human resource policies for like janitorial staff, you know, lower paid workers, and then like professors and admin. And, you know, I think a lot of it was like people just didn't know, right? I mean, they're also just not trying to find out.
Right.
But once they started organizing around it, and, you know, the some of the professors did find out, there was various discussions and panels, and then there was a walkout, you know, so they eventually did mobilize. I do think that there has to be a call to solidarity. I mean, who is going to buy our book that costs in hardcover like $27? Affluent, professional, liberal women. And I think there has to be some kind of a standing up for other women who are not making the same wages. I do think that has to be part of moving forward.
No, and what I keep saying all the time, and, you know, people ask me, why am I, well, politically, why am I on the island that I am as a labor person? I think, you know, organized labor and people joining and forming unions can solve many of our societal problems. This one being front and center. You brought up a huge issue that nobody talks about. Half the people don't know how little they're being compensated for the work that they do compared to other people. And it's the lack of transparency, especially when you're talking about the gap between men and women, that I think is a major driver in this. And where union contracts, you write it down on paper, it's right there. These are the terms of your employment, and it's irrefutable. It's there. This is where I think solves some of those problems.
You might have even talked about, we also in the book talk about the Stop and Shop strike in the Northeast.
Yep.
And I really found that, like, I talked to some, you know, on both sides, and there really was this recognition of like, listen, this is a cashier that I come into contact with all the time. We ask each other about our kids, right? And then all of a sudden it's in the paper, like they're really being mistreated, right? The wages are low. There's no, you know, the benefits are being rolled back and taken away. And that strike was pretty successful. I mean, people were not crossing the picket line. And the picket line really did contain, at least like what I witnessed, a lot of moms and kids, right? Just, and so the affluent moms that we spoke with were really saying, you know, that was part of it for them, just like realizing, no, I'm not going to do this, right? I'm going to stand up for those moms. And if I need to inconvenience myself, you know, to shop somewhere else, then so be it.
No, and this is where, you know, as a society, we have to make these choices. You know, if our political system in this moment is so broken that we can't address these needs, maybe we need to do it through direct action and then eventually through government policy, because I believe government policy is something that we need to be doing. And I think it's something that we want. It's a matter of just getting the people in there. Once we get off the outrage candy and the bread and circus, and start focusing on real policy and making people's lives better, maybe we can do some of that. So last question I've got for you, you know, in looking at this, what's the hope that people will take from this book? Is there a motivation you want? Is there an action? You want people marching in the streets with pitchforks? What's the hope?
Right. I would say, like, kind of on three levels. One, think about if you're an affluent person who employs someone in your home, right? So like on that personal level, you know, there's Hand in Hand. There are different organizations where you can actually join together and organize together, like for domestic workers, for instance. Then also, you know, at your workplace, how are all the different levels of employees treated? Like, you know, not like people in warehouses, salaried professionals, if you working at PepsiCo, what are they doing with hourly workers in the bottling factory? And then I think the next level would be, you know, policy advocacy in your state. We're talking about universal child care. It seems like it's dying in the federal level at this point. So, you know, pushing forward state by state. New Mexico had, you know, there was actually a lot of movement in terms of state level policy. Lots of policies actually happen that way, right? So like the federal lunch program, AFDC, they start out by organizing on the state level. And then, you know, once we have something, right, that's working, then the federal government will be like, oh, okay, maybe this is something we need. So maybe that's how we're going to get universal childcare, you know? So find out what's happening policy-wise in your state and what you can do to support it.
So basically what I always say, change the world by changing your little piece of it.
There yes, go. Exactly.
Good stuff. Mm-hmm. The book, Getting Me Cheap, How Low-Wage Work Traps Women and Girls in Poverty, written by Amanda Freeman and Lisa Dodson. Get it over at thenewpress.com. We'll get links out on social media. I can do that. Amanda, it was great talking with you. I appreciate you taking time for us.
Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Good stuff. Thanks so much. Again, Getting Me Cheap over at thenewpress.com. Going to take a quick break right back after this. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk. If you're a fan of the show, you've heard our Labor History in Two segments. And you can hear them on the radio pretty much anywhere in the U.S. Labor history has never been more important than it is right now. So here's what we'd like you to do. Tell a teacher. Tell a teacher that labor history is important and that they can get digestible two-minute lessons that are absolutely free. Free to download, free to use, free to share. Tell a teacher to go to therickssmithshow.com/history and help us put labor back where it belongs. In the classroom. You know, generations of American workers fought, bled, and died to build the American way of life. It's our job to keep their stories alive. Go tell a teacher that we're here to help them do just that. Find us at therickssmithshow.com/history today.
Welcome back to The Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So, idiotic quote of the day. This is hysterical. I ended up falling down the Idaho Statesman editorial board website. They had a story that caught my attention. It was titled, Actions Speak Louder Than Words, after Idaho legislator apologizes for cow comment. This guy, Jack Nelson, Republican from Jerome, Idaho, he said that he knows a thing or two about them women folk. it is what it is. He said, I've milked a few cows, spent most of my time walking behind lines of cows. So if you want some ideas on repo and the women's health thing, I have some definite opinions. Jack, you've been spending too much time on the farm with the cows. You've been spending too much time milking the cows. Not the same, Jack. Now, the weird thing is, no one was talking about reproductive rights. No one was talking about women. They were simply introducing themselves. That's the other funny part. They're going, hey, what's your name? Where are you from? What do you do? This is what he came up with. Hi, I'm Jack. I milk cows. I know women stuff. Yeah. And you wonder why we can't get smart policy. You wonder why we can't get things. It's shocking. It really is shocking who we put into elected office. Now, like I said, I fell into the rabbit hole of the Idaho Statesman. Watched some of their editorial board videos. And look, you know, this is, and I'm glad I did. I mean, this is the reason you need local journalism. Because there was a video on there back from June of 2016 where they had the guy who was the head of the Idaho Department of Health and Welfare, a guy named Dick Armstrong, who, you know, I started watching the video and I'm going, this guy makes a lot of sense. And yes, he's a Republican. Holy, what? He was talking about healthcare needs for people who were sick. He's going, you know, we need to have a healthcare floor. We need to have, you know, a way to treat people with early illnesses, like especially diabetes, because eventually what happens is you end up chopping something off. Then they can't work and they end up on disability and they're a drain. You know, maybe if we got them now again, this is 2016. Maybe if we got them the insulin that they needed, maybe if we got them the treatment that they needed, the preventative care, maybe if we did that, we wouldn't have these large costs down the road, and that those people who are managing their illness would be productive taxpaying citizens. Maybe. And I'm going, where is this policy? Where is this stuff? Because we don't have those conversations anymore. And we don't see them in the media. This is the weird thing. I'm watching this video and I'm going, why didn't this get into the newspaper? Where's the headline for this? Oh, that's right. Nobody wants to click on that. We want to click on some moron said he knows about women folk. Because that's what got me to click on it. But it led me to the next story. And then the next one talking about, you know, how you make people's lives better. This is why you need local journalism. This is why you need independent media. This is why you need people who are not just clickbaiting, but actually holding public officials accountable and getting people in those positions that actually want to do the job instead of making up fake scandal like, oh, Joe Biden's coming for your stoves. I'm still stuck on this. The stove troopers are coming. You know, a minute ago I had to check the door because I thought, you know, the stove troopers are coming. Because I have one of those camping things that you put on a little propane tank. I've got one of those in the garage. I'm fearful that they're coming for it. I haven't used it in 20 years, but they're going to come for it. I mean, stop and think about the ridiculousness of that statement. In a country, while we're talking about people who can't afford insulin. Because understand, what Biden was able to get through was only for Medicare. It's not for you. That $35 for insulin isn't for you and me, not for working people. Because we're still reliant on the good privatized healthcare, the corporate healthcare. You know, the ones where they keep raising our premiums and raising our deductibles and lowering our ability to get access to the care. You know, that stuff. You frustrated yet? You ready to grab the pitchforks? Ready to do all of that yet? I hope so. Hope we get there. Because we're going to need to, and we're going to need to soon. But this idea that we can use smart policy to make people's lives better encourages me. The fact that there was a Republican in Idaho, saying, yeah, we need to have a health safety net. We need to have a floor under people's feet. We need to make sure that when someone gets sick, they get care. If nothing more, and look, I think it's just a natural right. I think it's the humane thing to do. But even if the reason that you think that is it's, you know, cost effective, it's cheaper. It's cheaper to treat somebody at the beginning of an illness than it is after you've hacked off a couple of limbs. So why not do the preventative stuff? It's like my son is 16. He's just learned to drive, and one of the things I've attempted to hammer into his brain is while he is driving, to understand that there's some preventative maintenance you need to do. You need to check the oil, make sure all the fluids are in place. You do that preventative stuff so that you don't run it at 90 miles an hour with no oil in it and then are shocked when the pistons burn up. Yes, I know he shouldn't be doing 90 anyway. Stay out of my story. The point being, you got to do your preventative maintenance. And that was one of the things the Affordable Care Act did, I thought. Gave people the ability to get those checkups, to try and move us to a preventative system. Sadly, our healthcare system is consolidated to the point where navigating it has gotten much more difficult. Which, again, policy made, policy can unmake. Policy can move us in many directions. Just a matter of what policy are we going to move towards. Do we respect work? Do we want reward for work? Do we want good wages, conditions, benefits? We can make that happen. we can pursue policies that allow that. Or do we want low-road, desperate work of people that we give nice titles like hero, like essential, and that they live in squalor and poverty? Those are choices. Here we are. Love to hear your thoughts, though. Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. Love to hear your thoughts. Miss any portion of the program? Make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you get your favorite podcast, you'll get ours. And make sure you follow us on social media.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Chuck Sievertson. With thousands of evacuations and power outages still in California, yet another big storm's coming tomorrow night, says ABC's Alex Stone in Los Angeles.
With the National Guard deployed and FEMA on the ground, Governor Gavin Newsom says the storms have had an incredible impact, with more storms moving in this weekend.
Remember, California's size at 21 state populations combined.
He's now calling on Californians to remain vigilant this weekend when more flooding and mudslides are a real possibility.
People are cleaning up after weather officials reported over 40 tornadoes across seven states, Georgia and Alabama getting the worst of it, with several deaths. One of the volunteers in Alabama's Autauga County.
We're going to take care of our people. We'll take care of ours, and any help is welcome.
Special Counsel Robert Hur beginning his review of classified documents found in President Biden's Delaware home and at his personal office in Washington. He's appointed by the Attorney General. Wall Street's major indexes closed higher for the day. This is ABC News.
Local radio for your community. Civic Media broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin.
For Civic Media, I'm Terry Bell with this news. The TikTok social media app is now banned on Wisconsin state government computers, cell phones, and other devices. Officials are concerned TikTok's Chinese owners can track American users and get a hold of their data. Governor Evers says he made the decision after talking with the FBI, Homeland Security, and cybersecurity experts. Too much winter road salt is bad for drinking water as well as lakes, rivers, and streams. That's according to the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. The group Wisconsin Saltwise says one teaspoon of salt can make 5 gallons of water toxic for freshwater fish and other organisms. Wisconsin Salt Awareness Week is the 23rd through the 27th. In sports, the Bucks fell to Miami last night 108-102. You're listening to Oshkosh Air Support, 98.3 FM, WISS 1100 AM.
You wanted information as election results rolled in, and the Civic Media Network of radio stations delivered it live.
I was so impressed with your coverage. And I listened to you guys, and I got all the coverage. It was amazing.
Civic Media, the only network with news reporters and show hosts stationed across Wisconsin, sharing political insight not found anywhere else. Elections or anytime, we are here for you, your local Civic Media radio stations, and streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is Pat Greitlow from Up North News Radio. On the air, online, or on demand, make it a point to catch the first word on Wisconsin news, sports, and more weekday mornings from 6 to 8 all across the stations of the Civic Media Radio Network.
I was just curious as to why you called it the Paul Revere Show.
The Paul Revere Show is named this way because the poem that we all know, the famous ride, the poem was written to rally the troops to fight slavery and fight for democracy. And so I named the show the Paul Revere Show because I thought it was the time to get on the air and talk about democracy.
The Paul Revere Show with Mark Thompson. Listen Monday, 7 to 8 p.m., always on the Civic Media app.
Dueling Tangents with Luke and Brian.
I'm really trying hard not to go insane from the mind screw that is this situation. Yes. With I was going to say the GAB, but now it's the WEC, which right. Was audited by the LAB, and then it's now screwed up by the GOP, and we're all SOL. Good for us. Congratulations.
Look at all those acronyms. Yeah.
We're the winners.
Tune in for Dueling Tangents every weekday at 2.
Go to fixthecourt.com.
The Hightower.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
So interesting story over at the Wall Street Journal. Evidently, they're still. I guess they're still pretending to look for the leaker. You remember the Alito draft memo of the draft opinion of the Roe decision that somehow just got misplaced. They're still diligently seeking out the leaker, and according to the Wall Street Journal, they've narrowed it to several possible suspects, a small number, including law clerks. And I'm going, how come nobody's saying it's Alito? Remember, my first inclination was it was Alito. Or possibly Jenny Thomas, but I'm going Alito. We will find out. Anyway, here to share some thoughts on the top stories of the day, our good friend, former Ohio congressman and political analyst, Bob Ney. Bob, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick.
So, what do you think? Will we ever find the true leaker?
Well, maybe someday in 20 years, somebody will write a book on their deathbed. They will confess something, possibly.
Yeah, they'll write the book and then take pride for it.
Yeah, or they'll write a book, and then that way it'll be past any problems they have legally, and they'll make some money.
Is there a statute of limitations on this, do you think? Is there?
Probably. First of all, I don't believe, I could be really, really wrong, unless they signed a contract, I don't think it's a criminal offense.
Interesting.
It might be ethical.
Yeah, but...
But unless they signed a contract of some type, or agreed, to not do it.
I got to think, if you're working in the Supreme Court, there's got to... We make workers at Jimmy John sign non-disclosure or non-compete agreements. Everywhere
right.
you go, they've got non-disclosure agreements. I can't imagine the Supreme Court of the United States not having the people that work for them, bound and gagged. I can't imagine that.
They might have signed something, but I have never heard in this entire drama over the leak that there was a certain statute and
you're right,
prosecute. I've never heard that. Maybe they have an internal document that they sign that they're not going to give over information, but I've never seen anything involving a criminal statute.
You'll lose your good lawyer card. That's maybe what it'll be. Let's move along. Evidently, State of the Union, February 7th. You ready for the big State of the Union?
Well, I think it'll be interesting, put it that way.
Entertaining.
I'm looking more with interest the whole debt ceiling arguments that are going to be beginning.
Okay, so you're going to jump right to that with me. All right, good, because I was going to get here. Because I thought this wasn't until August.
It will be from the projections, and here's how I think it's going to run. Because of the steps that let's go back to the State of the Union for a second. I'm sure that this will be addressed in the State of the Union, for sure. It benefits, first of all, the president to address it.
Right.
It'll be interesting how, one thing I will comment on the State of the Union, I'm wondering about the decorum. What the new speaker will tell the members to do in the sense of decorum, no yelling out you're a liar or, anything like Wilson did that time. I'm just curious what that's going to be. Now, with Biden, of course, as a president, is going to have to lay out an agenda, and it's going to have to involve conversations about inflation, but I know that debt ceiling is going to be part of this. Yellen, Secretary of the Treasury, is having to take kind of unusual, even more than in the past, Rick, unusual steps to begin the process now. So I think that the figure for the debt ceiling is coming quicker than everybody thought it would. But that's for a lot of reasons. I believe there is a recession in the move right now. And so as a result, I think that probably Yellen is having to take these measures early. And it's probably going to come to a head-on collision around June, from what I've read.
So you're on the, because I've had a bunch of people tell me, yes, there's a recession definite coming. And some say, no, we don't actually know. They've been saying we've been in recession for, a recession has a specific definition, and that's two negative quarters in a row. We haven't had that in a while. So you're seeing it coming.
Yes, well, here's what I, now, I don't think it's going to be, if you want to say a 1 to 10 recession, are we going to be into a 10, you know, nightmare right before the Depression? No, but I think we're going to be at about a 4.
Okay.
I think it'll be, you know, solvable. But if we look at some history, and this is, I think we have to remember, at least this is my observation, these are really unique times. They really are. We have come off of a series of collisions, of a worldwide pandemic,
yep.
a worldwide disruption in the entire food chain, in the product chain, et cetera. And then we had the Fed, which really responded a little bit late, but when it did interest rate after interest rate hikes a little bit too fast because it kind of threw people into what do we do here? People are trapped in rent. If you look at the price of eggs, because they had to kill all these chickens due to the new flu, if you look at the price of food, you know, everything around, and I think what has happened is that the gross domestic product, this is why some people probably say no to a recession, but the gross domestic product, it's not catching up. It's ahead of the job loss numbers that I think are going to be around the corner. They haven't begun, but they're going to be around the corner. You're starting to see certain layoffs. And why? Because of prices. Prices affects the market so much, you know, with goods and services and, you know, down the line. And housing is the backbone of America. And right now, you know, the housing decline, lack of starts, and people, like I said, trapped in rent, it's increasing.
Yeah.
I think it's just going to squeeze everything at once. And there'll probably be some relief towards the fall. So I don't think it's something that's going to sit there and last forever. And I mean, you know, I don't profess to be, you know, the world's smartest economist or anything, but if you look back at the Bush history, that's where I based this on, you know, around what was going on in 2007, it might be a little bit of a repeat with the gross domestic product versus job losses, maybe.
Now, you mentioned the Fed, you know, really, I think, you know, panicked with the slamming on the brakes a little bit. So how much of this can be, you know, what you're laying out can be attributed to the fact that I think they overreacted. I think they did so to quash, you know, labor continuing to ask for higher wages. Because, look, in an inflationary period, as long as wages are going up with inflation, and it doesn't hurt average people. What hurts is when your wages don't keep up. So when people were demanding higher wages because the labor market is still tight because people are still saying nobody wants to work anymore, Bob. You know, they had to quash that a little bit, and I think they went a little too far.
Well, I do think they went too far. A few hikes, you know, would have been within order, I think, but they went, you know, one after the other in a pretty rapid, you know, succession. And they, you know, they based everything on squeezing the housing. But I think what you said is a good observation. I don't think it was just squeezing housing. I think that, you know, it's part and parcel to squeezing wages. And you're right. I mean, if the wages naturally, if the prices go up and people have to pay more and they don't have as much liquid income, they need to have their pay increased. And at some point in time, it flattens out. But when the interest rates were pushed time after time after time, I think too rapidly, then you've got this period right now where people are starting to say, wow, you know, go to the grocery store and you just sit back and your eyes roll.
Yeah, no, same thing when you go to fill up your tank. It's still, prices have come down, but not near enough for most people because the wages haven't continued to go up. And I go back to my grandparents' generation. You know, they lived through the stagflation period of the 70s, and my grandfather's union contract had cost of living adjustments. So as inflation went up, his wages went up, so their standard of living didn't go down. But I tell the story all the time. They bought their house in the 60s. By the end of the 70s, within 10 years, their mortgage was a day's pay. Can you imagine today that kind of wage inflation for you to be able to keep? Had wages kept up with inflation, the wages workers would be earning?
Had they kept up. I use the example of Ohio State. I was working as a glass worker. I was able to, with my parents' help, was able to get through college with no loan, right? Ohio State was $750 a year for three quarters. And people say, well, Bob, you know, wage-wise, I was making $3 an hour. So that allowed me to go through. Go ahead and make minimum wage today and try to pay college.
Yep.
$32,000 in Ohio State? I don't think so.
No. I have friends who, you know, one friend in particular, she went all the way through the University of Michigan, all the way through law school, doing exactly what you said. Worked as a waitress, lived in a crummy apartment, drove a jalopy of a car, but walked out of there with a law degree and no debt. Think about that in today's world, what we've done to a generation of a couple of generations now of students just trying to fight for that American dream that my generation was told was the only pathway to the middle class.
Right. It doesn't exist now. I mean, good luck with that, you know.
And this is why I think people...
I think the State of the Union is going to be pretty economically oriented, but yeah. They've got to begin to bring up the debt ceiling because this is the... I mean, there's the investigations and everything else going on with the Republicans, but as you know, Rick, this debt ceiling, if we thought it was going to be, you know, a battle in the past, the 20, as I call them, they're going to be all over McCarthy, yeah. And McCarthy is not going to want any part of, you know, shutting the government down during what I'm saying is the beginning of a recession.
No, this is bad, but like you've said, those 20, I believe they want to shoot the hostage. I believe they want to Well, you got them saying they're going to hold on to a hot stove. Anyway, I got to get your thoughts on the Merrick Garland and the probe into Biden having classified information. I've got tons of emails of people saying, see, Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. The message that's now being sent, Bob, is Trump did nothing wrong.
Well, first of all, things come in threes. Deaths. And documents. So President Biden's on two. There probably is going to be a third found somewhere, all right? There's two incidences. There are stark differences. No question about it. If you look at the number of documents between Trump and Biden, all right, that in itself is a stark difference. If you look at the article laid this out today, if you look at the way they were handled by Trump's attorneys, the way they were handled by, you know, President Biden's. And if you look at the, you know, the attitude and responses, right? But having said that, as I told a friend of mine today who does Democratic consulting, and he said, well, you know, Trump was far worse. I said, it doesn't matter.
Nope.
Now, it doesn't exonerate the way Trump handled everything, and it doesn't exonerate how the documents existed, but I'm sorry, this makes it a wash. It's for if you were Merrick Garland today, think about this, and you had a meeting of your top people in your office, don't you think everybody kind of had to sit and stare at each other and start tapping pencils? I mean, you know?
No, and what's interesting to me is how quickly Merrick Garland worked on this, how quickly we got a special counsel, and how quickly this moved.
Sure.
And it's interesting because, you know, I guess for me, the message out of this is, and I think long term, the message will be that maybe the Republican way is the way of the future. Obstruct, lie, obfuscation, you know, all the things that you can do to, you know, just say no. Because when you cooperate, when you say, yeah, we'll fully cooperate, we'll give you whatever you want. Oh, this is yours here. We'll give it back. That seems to work against you.
Yeah, so that's my point with Garland today, and I said, his, you know, his top people tapping their pencils at each other. Why? I mean, somebody answer this for me. What was the nature of the investigation for when they were simply returned and they didn't have to go get a subpoena or a search warrant to do it?
Yeah, because I think that's what I wanted an investigation, and thank goodness the Republicans, the Democrats, Republicans are now going to show you how to run a hit attack investigation, because this is all we're going to see for the next several months. But already, Jim Jordan's, you know, licking his chops. They're beginning the probe right now into these documents. This because China and Hunter Biden, and I'm sure the laptop's going to be pulled in, and Hillary's emails are going to come back up. This is going to be a show.
Well, they're asking Yellen for any information also from the Treasury on the president, his brother, and then, of course, his son, and any of the, quote, Biden holdings, you know, et cetera. I don't know what the Treasury would have.
Yeah, and anyone who ever rode the Amtrak train with Joe Biden at any point in history.
Right. They'll bring in the guy that sold pizza on the train.
No, well, but, hey, no, the train could have been made by a Chinese company, and Joe Biden did that, evidently. So this is how far this stuff's going to go. We saw this during Benghazi. We're going to see the Benghazi-ing of Biden.
So, but I back to the documents for a second. So I think, again, when I say this is a wash, I said this today on a couple of the shows, and I'll say it again, that there will be no type of punitive or criminal action against Trump or Biden, either one. And I think this injects a whole political scenario of consideration now in the Department of Justice, because anybody, we can say, well, they don't base their decisions on it. They don't always do that. But on this case, I'm just thinking this through. And, in some people's mind, you had a document. You both had documents. Why do you have documents? One thing this should do, though, this should surely prove to any QAnon conspiracy people that conspiracies don't really exist, because the government is not smart enough to even move pieces of paper, appropriately.
No. But here's the other thing. If you want to go, you brought up Q. So maybe we can go to R. The next conspiracy level.
Right.
Is it possible? Because it just seems convenient that all of this hit as quickly as it did, when it did. And I'm still trying to figure out how, and I think an investigation I doubt it's going to get to that. This is all going to be about attacks. But there's part of me that goes, is there palace intrigue here? Is this a way to move Biden along in 2024? I don't like falling down these rabbit holes. But it seems weird.
Well, I wonder in this case, and I what you raise is interesting, but I wonder in this case, and I thought this yesterday, why was it released now? And is it very possible that the president himself basically wasn't aware of it, the lawyers took care of it, et cetera. But why release now? That does baffle me, timing of this thing.
It's completely baffling. Now, what's interesting, I had a conversation with a guy yesterday who was, Joe Biden did all this stuff, and, he's worse than Trump, and I'm going, but I thought he was Sleepy Joe and had dementia. Can we make the dementia argument?
Right.
He took it without knowing, because he said he was surprised he had him. He didn't know he had him. And look, if you're in that position and you're as deeply into actually doing your job as Biden was as vice president, you come across a lot of stuff. I don't imagine that Trump read any of the documents that he had control of.
Well, Trump's argument was that he declassified his.
Well, he declassified everything. He did the magic wand thing. Everything is declassified.
That was his argument. With Biden, that's why I was saying, when this all came out the other day, it's very possible they went to the president and said, this is going to come out, and he didn't necessarily even know. It was considered a routine thing. They found some documents. Somebody moved them from the government, didn't put them in the right place, and the end result is that they turned them back over.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, this leaks out. I don't know why. It just wasn't stated at the time, or maybe it wasn't considered to be, quote, that big of a deal. But the timing of it is, I do agree, it's a strange thing.
Yeah, it's curious. And I don't know, you just don't drop them off in the Dropbox at the library, because evidently classified information is freaking everywhere.
Right.
We'll see where it is.
Like I said, people think the government is so sophisticated. We could look back at the history of human error in the government in modern times, and you could write a book on it.
Yeah. Well, lastly, I wanted to get your thoughts on the George Santos bit. The first Republican has come forth to call for him to resign, Ohio Republican Max Miller. Is the first to come out and say that Santos should resign. Any thoughts?
Well, it's going to get louder and longer. I was told by somebody on Capitol Hill today, Rick, that when he, came in, for the swearing in and everything, they kind of expected with his problems that he would be, kind of contrite and, et cetera, trying to watch his P's and Q's, be on the down low, and that's not the case with him.
No.
Seems to have no remorse, just is becoming obviously persona non grata. So I don't think this is the last of members to go. Now, as far as the, seating of him, I knew that was going to happen because they were stuck between, they had a quagmire, they were stuck between not being able to throw out a person that wasn't a member yet, right? And stuck between no existing law that says you can't be a liar and walk up with your certificate and be sworn in. Now he's sworn in. Now he sets himself under an entirely different structure of an ethics committee, which is, you know, happening. McCarthy, however, still won't say anything as speaker because there's going to be a couple of votes. He might need him. But in the end, Santos is going to, he'll be gone, is what will happen. Then there'll be a special election, and then there'll be one less vote for the Republicans, which is already going to be a lot of close votes.
Interesting times we will be seeing very soon. But I you know, it's just one of those things where you go, this is why we have elections. Isn't this why he was supposed to be vetted? And I'm glad the Democrats haven't jumped in the middle of it to try and save anything. Let the Republicans deal with their own headache.
You really can't make this stuff up, you know, if you tried.
No, it's crazy stuff. But Bob, as always, I appreciate the time. Excellent stuff.
Thank you, Rick.
Look, this Santos thing is amazing. I mean, the level of BS. You have this where, all politicians, bend the reality a little bit. You know, they want to speak in the most favorable terms possible. Like anything, if you're trying to sell yourself, you want to present the best you possible. He just completely made up a whole bunch of other stuff. And I've been enjoying some of the stuff on social media about how thanks to him we won World War II and how he did actually say he doubled the profits at Goldman Sachs while actually never working there. But here again, I come back to my basic premise in this. The sad reality is this doesn't hurt the Republican brand at all because it plays right into the frame of they're all crooks, they're all corrupt, the system doesn't work, it's all broken, it's all bad. It plays right into that frame. And what don't we get? We don't get good governance. We don't get representation for we the people. We don't get the things that we need, roads, bridges, healthcare, education. We don't get those things that we should be fighting for because, well, this is what you got. Now, the argument is, well, people of his district voted for him. And there's an argument to be made for that. I had someone say he should be able to finish out his term because, that's how it goes. He was elected. He has all that. And in fact, I think he said that if he gets the number of people to sign a petition with the number of votes that he won by, I think it's some convoluted thing that he would resign or something. Every person in that district should go, no, we don't want a thief, a liar, and a cheat representing us. And Republicans should purge him to save themselves, but they won't. They won't. Now, I'm looking forward to February 7th, the State of the Union. I'm looking forward to the president laying out the accomplishments because he has had many. Talk a lot about the infrastructure bill, talk a lot about the investments we've made in the country and how it is helping with the inflation. I'm not so far down the road that we're headed for a definite recession. I think I think the Fed, the powers to be want it. They need it. I had someone the other day who was a small business owner tell me it's his belief that what we need mass pain to get people desperate again to get them back to work for crummy wages. The way it used to be. And there is, I got to tell you, I think the business roundtable, I think they're thinking the exact same way. You working folk, you gotten a little too uppity, gotten a little too used to eating on a regular. We need to make things desperate again. And they do. They pull the levers to make the economy worse when they need to make people desperate to show up to those jobs and better when things aren't going great. We give them way too much power. And again, you look at our political system. It's all geared towards enriching them. Not you, not me, not our children, corporate America, and the very wealthy. Question is, how much longer are we going to put up with that? How much longer are we going to vote for the George Santoses of the world? Something seriously wrong, my friends. Something seriously wrong. And the way forward is us, you, me, working people, taking off the red hat and the blue hat, picking up a hard hat and getting to work to fix this country. We can do it. Want to hear your thoughts? Email me, rick@thericksmithshow.com. I do answer all emails personally. If you miss any portion of our program, make sure you grab the podcast. Wherever you find your favorite podcasts, you'll find ours, from Stitcher to Podbean and everywhere in between. Thanks so much for tuning in. We'll see you back here next time.
You're listening to WISS 1100 AM Berlin, W252 DR Oshkosh, and WGBW 1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV.